her shaking hands hovering over the wound in his throat. Voss stood over her with a bloody knife. Akos went limp.
"Let him up, Suzao," Voss said. Suzao, the one with his boot digging into Akos' face, lifted his foot and dragged Akos to his feet. He couldn't take his eyes off his dad's body. How his skin had broken open like the table in the living room. How much blood surrounded him. How can a person have that much blood? And the color of it, the dark orange-red-brown. Voss still held the blood-stained knife out from his side. His hands were wet.
"All clear, Kalmev," Voss said to the tall Shotet.
He grunted in reply. He had grabbed Aija and put a metal cuff around his wrists. If Aija had resisted, at first, he was finished now, staring dully at their dad, slumped on the living room floor.
"Thank you for answering my question about which of your siblings we are looking for," Voss said to Akos. "It seems you will both be coming with us, by virtue of your fates."
Suzao and Voss flanked Akos and pushed him forward. At the last second he broke away, falling to his knees at his dad's side and touching his face. Alsa felt warm and clammy. His eyes were still open, but losing life by the second, like water going down a drain. They skipped to Aija, who was halfway out the front door, pressed forward by the Shotet soldiers.
"I'll bring him home," Akos said, jostling his dad's head a little so he would look at him. "I will."
Akos wasn't there when the life finally left his dad. Akos was in the feather grass, in the hands of his enemies. 2.
Chapter 3. Syra. I was only 6 seasons old when I went on my first sojourn. When I stepped outside, I expected it to be into sunlight. Instead, I walked into the shadow of the sojourn ship, covering the city of Voa, the capital of Shotet, like a massive cloud. It was longer than it was wide, its nose coming to a gentle point with panes of unbreakable glass above it. Its metal-plated belly was battered by over a decade of space travel, but some of the overlapping sheets were polished where they had been replaced. Soon we would be standing inside it, like masticated food inside the stomach of a great beast. Near the rear jets was the open terminal where we would soon board. Most Shotet children were permitted to go on their first sojourn, our most significant rite, when they were 8 seasons old. But as a child of the Sovereign, Lazmet Noavek, I was prepared for my first journey through the galaxy 2 seasons earlier. We would follow the current stream around the galaxy's edge until it turned darkest blue, and then descend to a planet's surface to scavenge, the second part of the rite. It was traditional for the Sovereign and his or her family to enter the sojourn ship first, or at least it had been traditional since my grandmother, the first Noavek leader of Shotet, had declared it to be so.
"My hair itches," I said to my mother, tapping at the tight braids on the side of my head with my fingertip. There were only a few, pulled back and twisted together so my hair wouldn't fall in my face.
"What was wrong with my regular hair?"
My mother smiled at me. She wore a dress made of feather grass, the stalks crossed over the bodice and extending to frame her face. Otega, my tutor, among other things, had taught me that the Shotet had planted an ocean of feather grass between us and our enemies, the Thuvazit, to keep them from invading our land. My mother commemorated that clever act now with her dress. By design, everything my mother did echoed our history. "Today," she told me, "is the first day that most Shotet will lay eyes on you, not to mention the rest of the galaxy. The last thing we want is for them to fixate on your hair. By fixing it up, we make it invisible. Understand?" I didn't, but I didn't press the issue. I was looking at my mother's hair. It was dark, like mine, but a different texture. Hers was so curly it trapped fingers,
and mine was just straight enough to escape them.
The rest of the galaxy?
Technically, I knew how vast the galaxy was, that it held 9 significant planets and countless other fringe ones, as well as stations nestled in the unfeeling rock of broken moons, and orbiting ships so large they were like nation planets unto themselves. But to me, planets still seemed about as large as the house where I had spent most of my life, and no larger.
Your father authorized the procession footage to be sent to the general news feed, the one accessed by all assembly planets, my mother replied. Anyone who is curious about our rituals will be watching.
Even at that age, I did not assume that other planets were like ours. I knew we were unique in our pursuit of the current across the galaxy, that our detachment from places and possessions was singular. Of course the other planets were curious about us, maybe even envious. The Shotet had been going on the sojourn once a season for as long as our people had existed. Otega had told me once that the sojourn was about tradition, and the scavenge, which came afterward, was about renewal, the past and the future, all in one ritual. But I had heard my father say, bitterly, that we survived on other planets' garbage. My father had a way of stripping things of their beauty. My father, Lazmet Noavec, walked ahead of us. He was the first to pass through the great gates that separated Noavec Manor from the streets of Voa, his hand lifted in greeting. Cheers erupted at the sight of him from the huge, pulsing crowd that had gathered outside our house, so dense I couldn't see light between the shoulders of the people before us, or hear my own thoughts through the cacophony of cheers. Here in the center of the city of Voa, just streets away from the amphitheater where the arena challenges were held, the streets were clean, the stones under my feet intact. The buildings here were a patchwork of old and new, plain stonework and tall, narrow doors mixed with intricate metalwork and glass. It was an eclectic mixture that was as natural to me as my own body. We knew how to hold the beauty of old things against the beauty of the new, losing nothing from either. It was my mother, not my father, who drew the loudest cry from the sea of her subjects. She extended her hands to the people who reached for her, brushing their fingertips with her own and smiling. I watched, confused, as eyes teared up at the sight of her alone, as crooning voices sang her name. Ilira, Ilira, Ilira. She plucked a feathergrass stalk from the bottom of her skirt and tucked it behind a little girl's ear. Ilira, Ilira, Ilira. I ran ahead to catch up to my brother, Rizek, who was a full 10 seasons older than I was. He wore mock armor. He had not yet earned the armor made from the skin of a slain armored one, which was a status symbol among our people, and it made him look bulkier than usual, which I suspected was on purpose. My brother was tall, but lean as a ladder.
"Why do they say her name?"
I asked Rizek, stumbling to keep up with him.
"Because they love her," Riz said. "Just as we do."
"But they don't know her," I said.
"True," he acknowledged. "But they believe they do. And sometimes that's enough."
My mother's fingers were stained with paint from touching so many outstretched, decorated hands. I didn't think I would like to touch so many people at once. We were flanked by armored soldiers who carved a narrow path for us in the bodies. But really, I didn't think we needed them. The crowd parted from my father like he was a knife slicing through them. They may not have shouted his name, but they bent their heads to him, guided their eyes away from him. I saw, for the first time, how thin the line was between fear and love, between reverence and adoration. It was drawn between my parents.
"Syra,"
my father said, and I stiffened, almost going still as he turned toward me. He reached for my hand, and I gave it to him, though I didn't want to. My father was the sort of man a person just obeyed. Then he swung me into his arms,
quick and strong, startling a laugh from me. He held me against his armored side with one arm, like I was weightless. His face was close to mine, smelling of herbs and burnt things, his cheek rough with a beard. My father, Lazmet Noavec, sovereign of Shotet. My mother called him Laz when she didn't think anyone could hear her, and spoke to him in Shotet poetry.
"I thought you might want to see your people," my father said to me, bouncing me a little as he shifted my weight to the crook of his elbow.
His other arm, returning to his side, was marked from shoulder to wrist with scars, stained dark to stand out. He had told me once that they were a record of lives, but I didn't know what that meant. My mother had a few, too, though not half as many as my father.
"These people long for strength," my father said. "And your mother, brother, and I are going to give it to them. Someday, so shall you. Yes?"
"Yes," I said quietly, though I had no idea how I would do that.
"Good," he said. "Now wave."
Trembling a little, I extended my hand, mimicking my father. I stared, stunned, as the crowd responded in kind.
"Rizek," my father said. "Come on, little Noavec," Rizek said.
He didn't need to be asked to take me from my father's arms. He saw it in the man's posture, as surely as I felt it in the restless shift of his weight. I put my arms around Rizek's neck and climbed onto his back, hitching my legs on the straps of his armor. I looked down at his pimple-spotted cheek, dimpled with a smile.
"Ready to run?"
he said to me, raising his voice so I could hear him over the crowd.
"Run?"
I said, squeezing tighter. In answer, he held my knees tight against his sides and jogged down the pathway the soldiers had cleared, laughing. His bouncing steps jostled a giggle from me, and then the crowd, our people, my people, joined in, my eyeline full of smiles. I saw a hand up ahead, stretching toward me, and I brushed it with my fingers, just like my mother would. My skin came away damp with sweat. I found that I didn't mind it as much as I expected. My heart was full. Chapter 4. Syra. There were hidden hallways in the walls of Noavec Manor, built for the servants to travel through without disturbing us or our guests. I often walked them, learning the codes that the servants used to navigate, carved into the corners of the walls and the tops of entrances and exits. Otega sometimes scolded me for coming to her lessons covered in cobwebs and grime, but mostly, no one cared how I spent my free time as long as I didn't disturb my father. When I was newly 7 seasons old, my wanderings took me to the walls behind my father's office. I had followed a clattering sound there, but when I heard my father's voice raised in anger, I stopped and crouched. For a moment, I toyed with the idea of turning back, running the same way I had come so that I could be safe in my own room. Nothing good came of my father's raised voice, and it never had. The only one who could calm him was my mother, but even she couldn't control him.
"Tell me," my father said.
I pushed my ear to the wall to better hear him.
"Tell me exactly what you told him."
I thought... Reese's voice wobbled like he was on the verge of tears. That wasn't good either. My father hated tears.
"I thought, because he's training to be my steward, that he would be trustworthy." "Tell me what you told him."
I told him that my fate, as declared by the oracles, was to fall to the family Benazit, that they are one of the 2 Thuvazit families. That's all. I pulled away from the wall. A cobweb caught on my ear. I hadn't heard Rizek's fate before.
I knew my parents had shared it with him when most fated children found out their fates, when they developed a current gift. I would find out my own in a handful of seasons. But to know Rezex, to know that Rezex was to fall to the family Benazit, which had kept itself hidden for so many seasons we didn't even know their aliases or their planet of residence, was a rare gift. Or a burden.
Imbecile. That's all, my father said, scornful. You think that you can afford trust with a coward fate like yours? You must keep it hidden, or else perish under your own weakness.
I'm sorry, Reese cleared his throat. I won't forget. I will never do it again.
You are correct. You will not.
My father's voice was deeper now, and flat. That was almost worse than yelling.
We will just have to work harder to find a way out of it, won't we? Of the hundreds of futures that exist, we will find the one in which you are not a waste of time. And in the meantime, you will work hard to appear as strong as possible, even to your closest associates. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Good.
I stayed crouched there, listening to their muffled voices, until the dust in the tunnel made me want to sneeze. I wondered about my fate, if it would raise me up to power or cut me down. But now it felt more frightening than before. All my father wanted was to conquer Thuva, and Rezek was destined to failure, fated to let my father down. Dangerous, to anger my father with something you could not change. I ached for Reese, there in the tunnel, as I fumbled my way back to my bedroom. I ached, before I knew better. Chapter 5. Syra. A season later, when I was 8, my brother barged into my bedroom, breathless and soaked through with rain. I had just finished setting up the last of my figurines on the carpet in front of my bed. They were scavenged from the sojourn to Othir the year before, where they had a fondness for small, useless objects. He knocked some of them over when he marched across the room. I cried out in protest. He had ruined the army formation.
"Syra," he said, crouching beside me. He was 18 seasons old, his arms and legs too long, with spots on his forehead, but terror made him look younger.
I put my hand on his shoulder. "What is it?" I asked, squeezing.
"Has father ever brought you somewhere just to show you something?"
"No." Lazmet Noavec never took me anywhere. He barely looked at me when we were in the same room together. It didn't bother me. Even then, I knew that being the target of father's gaze was not a good thing.
"Never." "That's not exactly fair, is it?" Reese said eagerly. "You and I are both his children. We ought to be treated the same. Don't you think?"
I suppose, I said. "Reese, what is..." But Reese just placed his palm on my cheek. My bedroom, with its rich blue curtains and dark wood paneling, disappeared.
"Today, Rezek," my father's voice said, "you will give the order."
I was in a small, dark room, with stone walls and a huge window in front of me. My father stood at my left shoulder, but he seemed smaller than he usually was. I only came up to his chest in reality, but in that room I stared right at his face. My hands were clenched in front of me. My fingers were long and thin.
"You want..."
My breaths came shallow and fast.
"You want me to..."
"Get yourself together," my father growled, grabbing the front of my armor and jerking me toward the window.
Through it, I saw an older man, creased and gray-haired. He was gaunt and dead in the eyes, with his hands cuffed together. At Father's nod, the guards in the next room approached the prisoner. One of them held his shoulders to keep him still, and the other wrapped a cord around his throat, knotting it tightly at the back of his head. The prisoner didn't put up any protest. His limbs seemed heavier than they were supposed to be, like he had lead for blood. I shuddered, and kept shuddering.
"This man is a traitor," my father said. "He conspires against our family. He spreads lies about us stealing foreign aid from the hungry and the sick of Chotet. People who speak ill of our family can't simply be killed. They have to be killed slowly. And you have to be ready to order it. You must even be ready to do it yourself, though that lesson will come later."
Dread coiled in my stomach like a worm. My father made a frustrated noise in the back of his throat and shoved something into my hand. It was a vial sealed with wax.
"If you can't calm yourself down, this will do it for you," he said. "But one way or another, you will do as I say."
I fumbled for the edge of the wax, peeled it off, and poured the vial's contents into my mouth. The calming tonic burned my throat, but it took only moments for my heartbeat to slow and the edges of my panic to soften. I nodded to my father, who flipped the switch for the amplifiers in the next room. It took me a moment to find the words in the haze that had filled my mind.
"Execute him,"
I said, in an unfamiliar voice. One of the guards stepped back and pulled on the end of the cord, which ran through a metal loop in the ceiling like a thread through the eye of a needle. He pulled until the prisoner's toes just barely brushed the floor. I watched as the man's face turned red, then purple. He thrashed. I wanted to look away, but I couldn't.
"Not everything that is effective must be done in public," Father said casually as he flipped the switch to turn the amplifiers off again. "The guards will whisper of what you are willing to do to those who speak out against you, and the ones they whisper to will whisper also, and then your strength and power will be known all throughout Chotet."
A scream was building inside me, and I held it in my throat like a piece of food that was too big to swallow. The small, dark room faded. I stood on a bright street teeming with people. I was at my mother's hip, my arm wrapped around her leg. Dust rose into the air around us. In the capital city of the nation planet Zold, the dully named Zoldia City, which we had visited on my first sojourn, everything was coated in a fine layer of gray dust at that time of year. It came not from rock or earth, as I had assumed, but from a vast field of flowers that grew east of here and disintegrated in the strong seasonal wind. I knew this place, this moment. It was one of my favorite memories of my mother and me. My mother bent her head to the man who had met her in the street, her hand skimming my hair.
"Thank you, Your Grace, for hosting our scavenge so graciously," my mother said to him. "I will do my best to ensure that we take only what you no longer need."
"I would appreciate that. There were reports during the last scavenge of Chotet soldiers looting. Hospitals, no less,"
the man responded gruffly. His skin was bright with the dust, and almost seemed to sparkle in the sunlight. I stared up at him with wonder. He wore a long gray robe, almost like he wanted to resemble a statue.
"The conduct of those soldiers was appalling, and punished severely," my mother said firmly.
She turned to me.
"Syra, my dear, this is the leader of the capital city of Zold. Your Grace, this is my daughter, Syra."
"I like your dust," I said. "Does it get in your eyes?" The man seemed to soften a little as he replied,
"Constantly. When we are not hosting visitors, we wear goggles."
He took a pair from his pocket and offered them to me. They were big, with pale green glass for lenses. I tried them on, and they dropped straight from my face to my neck, so I had to hold them up with one hand. My mother laughed, light, easy, and the man joined in.
"We will do our best to honor your tradition," the man said to my mother. "Though I confess, we do not understand it."
"Well, we seek renewal above all else," she said. "And we find what is to be made new in what has been discarded. Nothing worthwhile should ever be wasted. Surely we can agree on that."
And then her words were playing backward, and the goggles were lifting up to my eyes, then over my head, and into the man's hand again. It was my first scavenge, and it was unwinding, unraveling in my mind. After the memory played backward, it was gone. I was back in my bedroom, with the figurines surrounding me, and I knew that I had had a first sojourn, and that we had met the leader of Zoldia City, but I could no longer bring the images to mind. In their place was the prisoner with the cord around his throat, and Father's low tones in my ear. Rhys had traded one of his memories for one of mine. I had seen him do it before, once to Voss, his friend and steward, and once to my mother. Each time he had come back from a meeting with my father looking like he had been shredded to pieces. Then he had put a hand on his oldest friend, or on our mother, and a moment later he had straightened, dry-eyed, looking stronger than before. And they had looked emptier, somehow. Like they had lost something.
"Syra," Rhys said. Tears stained his cheeks. "It's only fair. It's only fair that we should share this burden."
He reached for me again. Something deep inside me burned. As his hand found my cheek, dark, inky veins spread beneath my skin like many-legged insects, like webs of shadow. They moved, crawling up my arms, bringing heat to my face, and pain. I screamed, louder than I had ever screamed in my life, and Reese's voice joined mine, almost in harmony. The dark veins had brought pain. The darkness was pain, and I was made of it. I was pain itself. He yanked his hand away, but the skin shadows and the agony stayed. My current gift beckoned forward too soon. My mother ran into the room, her shirt only half-buttoned, her face dripping from washing without drying. She saw the black stains on my skin and ran to me, setting her hands on my arms for just a moment before yanking them back, flinching. She had felt the pain, too. I screamed again and clawed at the black webs with my fingernails. My mother had to drug me to calm me down. Never one to bear pain well, Rhys didn't lay a hand on me again. Not if he could help it. And neither did anyone else. Chapter 6. Syra.
"Where are we going?"
I chased my mother through the polished hallways, the floors gleaming with my dark-streaked reflection. Ahead of me, she was holding her skirts, her spine straight. She always looked elegant, my mother. She wore dresses with plates from an armored one built into the bodices, draped with fabric so they still looked light as air. She knew how to draw a perfect line on her eyelid that made it look like she had long eyelashes at each corner. I had tried to do that once, but I hadn't been able to keep my hand steady long enough to draw the line, and I had to stop every few seconds to gasp through pain. Now I favored simplicity over elegance. Loose shifts and shoes without laces, pants that didn't require buttoning, and sweaters that covered most of my skin. I was almost 9 seasons old, and already stripped of frivolities. The pain was just part of life now. Simple tasks took twice as long because I had to pause for breath. People no longer touched me, so I had to do everything myself. I tried feeble medicines and potions from other planets in the vain hope they would suppress my gift, and they always made me sick. "Quiet," my mother said, touching her finger to her lips. She opened a door, and we walked onto the landing pad on the roof of Noavec Manor. There was a transport vessel perched there like a bird resting mid-flight, its loading doors open for us. She looked around once, then grabbed my shoulder, covered with fabric so I didn't hurt her, and pulled me toward the ship. Once we were inside, she sat me down in one of the flight seats and pulled the straps tight across my lap and chest. "We're going to see someone who might be able to help you," she said. The sign on the specialist's door said Dr. Dax Fodlan, but he told me to call him Dax. I called him Dr. Fodlan. My parents had raised me to show respect to people who had power over me. My mother was tall, with a long neck that tilted forward, like she was always bowing. Right now, the tendon stood out from her throat, and I could see her pulse there, fluttering just at the surface of her skin. Dr. Fodlan's eyes kept drifting to my mother's arm. She had her kill marks exposed, and even they looked beautiful, not brutal, each line straight, all at even intervals. I didn't think Dr. Fodlan, an Otherian, saw many Shotet in his offices. It was an odd place. When I arrived, they put me in a room with a bunch of unfamiliar toys, and I played with some of the small figurines the way Rizek and I had at home, when we still played together. I lined them up like an army, and marched them into battle against the giant, squashy animal in the corner of the room. After about an hour, Dr. Fodlan had told me to come out, that he had finished his assessment. Only I hadn't done anything yet.
8 seasons is a little young, of course, but Syra isn't the youngest child I've seen develop a gift, Dr. Fodlan said to my mother.
The pain surged, and I tried to breathe through it, as they told Shotet soldiers to when they had to get a wound stitched and there was no time for a numbing agent. I had seen recordings of it.
Usually it happens in extreme circumstances, as a protective measure. Do you have any idea what those circumstances might have been? They may give us an insight into why this particular gift developed.
I told you, my mother said. I don't know. She was lying. I had told her what Rizek did to me, but I knew better than to contradict her now. When my mother lied, it was always for a good reason.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you that Syra is not simply growing into her gift, Dr. Fodlan said. This appears to be its full manifestation, and the implications of that are somewhat disturbing.
What do you mean? I didn't think my mother could sit up any straighter, and then she did.
The current flows through every one of us, Dr. Fodlan said gently. And like liquid metal flowing into a mold, it takes a different shape in each of us, showing itself in a different way. As a person develops, those changes can alter the mold the current flows through, so the gift can also shift. But people don't generally change on such a fundamental level.
Dr. Fodlan had an unmarked arm, and he did not speak the revelatory tongue. There were deep lines around his mouth and eyes, and they grew even deeper as he looked at me. His skin was the same shade as my mother's, however, suggesting a common lineage. Many Shotet had mixed blood, so it wasn't surprising. My own skin was a medium brown, almost golden in certain lights.
That your daughter's gift causes her to invite pain into herself and project pain into others suggests something about what's going on inside her, Dr. Fodlan said. It would take further study to know exactly what that is, but a cursory assessment says that on some level, she feels she deserves it, and she feels others deserve it as well.
You're saying this gift is my daughter's fault? The pulse in my mother's throat moved faster. That she wants to be this way?
Dr. Fadlan leaned forward and looked directly at me.
Syra, the gift comes from you. If you change, the gift will too.
My mother stood.
She is a child. This is not her fault, and it's not what she wants for herself. I'm sorry that we wasted our time here. Syra.
She held out her gloved hand, and wincing, I took it. I wasn't used to seeing her so agitated. It made all the shadows under my skin move faster.
As you can see, Dr. Fadlan said, it gets worse when she's emotional.
Quiet, my mother snapped. I won't have you poisoning her mind any more than you already have.
With a family like yours, my fear is that she has already seen too much for her mind to be saved,
he retorted as we left the room. My mother rushed us through the hallways to the loading bay. By the time we reached the landing pad, there were Aetherian soldiers surrounding our vessel. Their weapons looked feeble to me, slim rods with dark current wrapped around them, set to stun instead of kill. Their armor, too, was pathetic, made of pillowed synthetic material that left their sides exposed. My mother ordered me into the ship and paused to speak with one of them. I dawdled on my way to the door to hear what they said.
We are here to escort you off-world, the soldier said. I am the wife of the sovereign of Shotet. You should address me as my lady,
my mother snapped.
My apologies, ma'am, but the Assembly of Nine Planets recognizes no Shotet nation, and therefore no sovereign. If you leave the planet immediately, we will cause you no trouble.
No Shotet nation, my mother laughed a little. A time will come when you will wish you hadn't said that.
She clutched her skirts to lift them and marched into the ship. I scrambled inside and found my seat, and she sat beside me. The door closed behind us, and ahead of us, the pilot gave the signal for liftoff. This time, I pulled the straps across my own chest and lap, because my mother's hands were shaking too badly to do it for me. I didn't know it at the time, of course, but that was the last season I had with her. She passed away after the next sojourn, when I was 9. We burned a pyre for her in the center of the city of Voa, but the sojourn ship carried her ashes into space. As our family grieved, the people of Shotet grieved along with us.
Ilira Noavec will sojourn forever after the current, the priest said as the ashes launched behind us. It will carry her on a path of wonder.
For seasons afterward, I couldn't even speak her name. After all, it was my fault she was gone. Chapter 7. Syra. The first time I saw the Karaseth brothers, it was from the servants' passageway that ran alongside the weapons hall. I was several seasons older, fast approaching adulthood. My father had joined my mother in the afterlife just a few seasons prior, killed in an attack during a sojourn. My brother, Rizek, was now walking the path our father had set for him, the path toward Shotet legitimacy, maybe even Shotet dominance. My former tutor, Otega, had been the first to tell me about the Karasaths, because the servants in our house were whispering the story over the pots and pans in the kitchen, and she always told me of the servants' whispers.
They were taken by your brother's steward, Voss, she said to me as she checked my essay for grammatical errors.
She still taught me literature and science, but I had outstripped her in my other subjects, and now studied on my own as she returned to managing our kitchens.
I thought Rizek sent soldiers to capture the Oracle. The old one, I said.
He did, Ortega said. But the Oracle took her life in the struggle, to avoid capture. In any case, Voss and his men were tasked to go after the Karaseth brothers instead. Voss dragged them across the divide, kicking and screaming, to hear the others tell of it. But the younger one, Akos, escaped his bonds somehow, stole a blade, and turned it against one of Voss's soldiers. Killed him.
Which one? I asked. I knew the men Voss traveled with. Knew how one liked candy, another had a weak left shoulder, and yet another had trained a pet bird to eat treats from his mouth. It was good to know such things about people, just in case.
Kalmev Radix.
The candy lover, then. I raised my eyebrows. Kalmev Radix, one of my brother's trusted elite, had been killed by a Thuvazit boy? That was not an honorable death. Why were the brothers taken? I asked her.
Their fates.
Ortega waggled her eyebrows.
Or so the story goes. And since their fates are, evidently, unknown by all but Rizek, it is quite the story.
I didn't know the fates of the Karaseth boys, or any but mine and Rizek's, though they had been broadcast a few days ago on the Assembly news feed. Rizek had cut the news feed within moments of the Assembly leader coming on screen. The Assembly leader had given the announcement in Otherian, and though the speaking and learning of all languages but Shotet had been banned in our country for over 10 seasons, it was still better to be safe. My father had told me my own fate after my current gift manifested, with little ceremony. The second child of the family Noavek will cross the divide. A strange fate for a favored daughter, but only because it was so dull. I didn't wander the servants' passages that often anymore. There were things happening in this house I didn't want to see. But to catch a glimpse of the kidnapped Karaseths, well, I had to make an exception. All I knew about the Thuvazit people, apart from the fact that they were our enemies, was they had thin skin, easy to pierce with a blade, and they overindulged in ice flowers, the lifeblood of their economy. I had learned their language at my mother's insistence. The Shotet elite were exempt from my father's prohibitions against language learning, of course, and it was hard on my tongue, which was used to harsh, strong Shotet sounds instead of the hushed, quick Thuvazit ones. I knew Rizek would have the Karaseths taken to the weapons hall, so I crouched in the shadows and slid the wall panel back, leaving myself just a crack to see through, when I heard footsteps. The room was like all the others in Noavek Manor, the walls and floor made of dark wood so polished it looked like it was coated in a film of ice. Dangling from the distant ceiling was an elaborate chandelier made of glass globes and twisted metal. Tiny fenzu insects fluttered inside it, casting an eerie, shifting light over the room. The space was almost empty. All the floor cushions, balanced on low wooden stands for comfort, gathering dust, so their cream color turned gray. My parents had hosted parties in here, but Rizek used it only for people he meant to intimidate. I saw Voss, my brother's steward, before anyone else. The long side of his hair was greasy and limp, the shaved side red with razor burn. Beside him shuffled a boy, much smaller than I was, his skin a patchwork of bruises. He was narrow through the shoulders, spare and short. He had fair skin and a kind of wary tension in his body, like he was bracing himself. Muffled sobs came from behind him, where a second boy, with dense, curly hair, stumbled along. He was taller and broader than the first Karaseth, but cowering, so he almost appeared smaller. These were the Karaseth brothers, the fate-favored children of their generation. Not an impressive sight.
My brother waited for them across the room, his long body draped over the steps that led to a raised platform. His chest was covered with armor, but his arms were bare, displaying a line of kill marks that went all the way up the back of his forearm. They had been deaths ordered by my father, to counteract any rumors about my brother's weakness that might have spread among the lower classes. He held a small current blade in his right hand, and every few seconds he spun it in his palm, always catching it by the handle. In the bluish light, his skin was so pale he looked almost like a corpse. He smiled when he saw his Thuvazit captives, his teeth showing. He could be handsome when he smiled, my brother, even if it meant he was about to kill you. He leaned back, balancing on his elbows, and cocked his head.
"My, my," he said.
His voice was deep and scratchy, like he had just spent the night screaming at the top of his lungs.
"This is the one I've heard so many stories about,"
Rizek nodded to the bruised Karaseth boy. He spoke Thuvazit crisply.
"The Thuvazit boy who earned a mark before we even got him on a ship."
He laughed. I squinted at the bruised one's arm. There was a deep cut on the outside of his arm next to the elbow, and a streak of blood that had run between his knuckles and dried there. A kill mark, unfinished. A very new one, belonging, if the rumors were true, to Kalmev Rodix. This was Akos, then, and the snuffling one was Aija.
"Akos Karaseth, the third child of the family, Karaseth."
Rizek stood, spinning his knife on his palm, and walked down the steps. He dwarfed even Voss. He was like a regular-sized man stretched taller and thinner than he was supposed to be, his shoulders and hips too narrow to bear his own height. I was tall, too, but that was where my physical similarities with my brother ended. It wasn't uncommon for Shotet siblings to look dissimilar, given how blended our blood was, but we were more distinct than most. The boy, Akos, lifted his eyes to Rizek's. I had first seen the name Akos in a Shotet history book. It had belonged to a religious leader, a cleric who had taken his life rather than dishonor the current by holding a current blade. So this Thuvazit boy had a Shotet name. Had his parents simply forgotten its origins? Or did they want to honor some long-forgotten Shotet blood?
"Why are we here?"
Akos said hoarsely, in Shotet. Rizek only smiled further and responded in the same language.
"I see the rumors are true. You can speak the revelatory tongue. How fascinating. I wonder how you came by your Shotet blood."
He prodded the corner of Akos's eye at the bruise there, making him wince.
"You received quite a punishment for your murder of one of my soldiers, I see. I take it your rib cage is suffering damage."
Rizek flinched a little as he spoke. Only someone who had known him as long as I had could have seen it, I was certain. Rizek hated to watch pain, not out of empathy for the person suffering it, but because he didn't like to be reminded that pain existed, that he was as vulnerable to it as anyone else.
"Almost had to carry him here," Voss said. "Definitely had to carry him onto the ship."
"Usually you would not survive a defiant gesture like killing one of my soldiers," Rizek said, speaking down to Akos like he was a child. "But your fate is to die serving the family Noavek, to die serving me. And I'd rather get a few seasons out of you first, you see."
Akos had been tense since I laid eyes on him. As I watched, it was as if all the hardness in him melted away, leaving him looking as vulnerable as a small child. His fingers were curled, but not into fists. Passively, like he was sleeping. I guess he hadn't known his fate.
That isn't true, Akos said, like he was waiting for Rizek to soothe away the fear. I pressed a sharp pain from my stomach with a palm.
Oh, I assure you that it is. Would you like me to read from the transcript of the announcement?
Rizek took a square of paper from his back pocket. He had come to this meeting prepared to wreak emotional havoc, apparently, and unfolded it. Akos was trembling.
The third child of the family, Karasef,
Rizek read, in Otherian, the most commonly spoken language in the galaxy. Somehow hearing the fate in the language in which it had been announced made it sound more real to me. I wondered if Akos, shuddering at each syllable, felt the same.
Will die in service to the family, Noavek.
Rizek let the paper drop to the floor. Akos grabbed it so roughly it almost tore. He stayed crouched as he read the words, again and again, as if rereading them would change them, as if his death and his service to our family were not preordained.
It won't happen, Akos said, harder this time, as he stood. I would rather die than...
Oh, I don't think that's true, Rizek said, lowering his voice to a near whisper. He bent close to Akos's face. Akos's fingers tore holes in the paper, though he was otherwise still.
I know what people look like when they want to die. I've brought many of them to that point myself. And you are still very much desperate to survive.
Akos took a breath, and his eyes found my brother's with new steadiness.
My brother has nothing to do with you. You have no claim to him. Let him go, and I won't give you any trouble.
You seem to have made several incorrect assumptions about what you and your brother are doing here,
Rizek said.
We did not, as you have assumed, cross the divide just to speed along your fate. Your brother is not collateral damage. You are. We went in search of him.
You didn't cross the divide, Akos snapped. You just sat here and let your lackeys do it all for you.
Rizek turned and climbed to the top of the platform. The wall above it was covered with weapons of all shapes and sizes, most of them current blades as long as my arm. He selected a large, thick knife with a sturdy handle, like a meat cleaver.
Your brother has a particular destiny, Rizek said, looking the knife over. I assume, since you did not know your own fate, that you don't know his either.
Rizek grinned the way he always did when he knew something other people didn't.
To see the future of the galaxy, Rizek quoted, in Shotet this time. In other words, to be this planet's next oracle.
Akos was silent. I sat back from the crack in the wall, closing my eyes against the line of light so I could think. For my brother and my father, every sojourn since Rizek was young had been a search for an oracle, and every search had turned up empty. Likely because it was nearly impossible to catch someone who knew you were coming, or someone who might lay on a blade to avoid capture, as the Elder Oracle had in the same invasion that had brought the Karasefs here. But finally, it seemed Rizek had found a solution. He had gone after two oracles at once. One had avoided being taken by dying, and the other, this Aija Karaseth, didn't know what he was. He was still soft and pliable enough to be shaped by Noavek cruelty. I sat forward again to hear Aija speak, his curly head tipped forward.
Akos, what is he saying?
Aija asked in slippery Thuvazit, wiping his nose with the back of his hand.
He's saying they didn't come to Thuva for me, Akos said, without looking back.
It was strange to hear someone speak two languages so perfectly, without an accent. I envied him the ability.
They came for you. For me?
Aija's eyes were pale green, an unusual color, like iridescent insect wings, or the current stream after the deadening time. Against his light brown skin, so like the milky earth of the planet Zold, they almost glowed.
Why?
Because you are the next oracle of this planet, Rizek said to Aija in the boy's mother tongue, stepping down from the platform with the knife in hand.
You will see the future, in all its many, many varieties. And there is one variety in particular that I wish to know about.
A shadow darted across the back of my hand like an insect, my current gift making my knuckles ache like they were breaking. I stifled a groan. I knew what future Rizek wanted. To rule Thuva, as well as Shotet, to conquer our enemies, to be recognized as a legitimate world leader by the Assembly. But his fate hung over him as heavily as Akos's likely now hung over him, saying that Rizek would fall to our enemies instead of reign over them. He needed an oracle if he wanted to avoid that failure. And now, he had one. I wanted Shotet to be recognized as a nation instead of a collection of rebellious upstarts, just as much as my brother did. So why was the pain of my current gift, ever present, mounting by the second? Aija was watching the knife in Rizek's hand.
I'm not an oracle. I've never had a vision. I can't possibly.
I pressed against my stomach again. Rizek balanced the knife on his palm and flicked it to turn it. It wobbled, moving in a slow circle.
No, no, no.
I found myself thinking, unsure why. Akko shifted into the path between Rizek and Aija, as if he could stop my brother with the meat of his body alone. Rizek watched his knife turn as he moved toward Aija.
Then you must learn to see the future quickly, Rizek said, because I want you to find me the version of the future I need, and tell me what it is I must do to get to it. Why don't we start with a version of the future in which Shotet, not Thuva, controls this planet?
Hmm? He nodded to Vas, who forced Aija to his knees. Rizek caught the blade by its handle and touched the edge of it to Aija's head, right under his ear. Aija whimpered.
I can't, Aija said. I don't know how to summon visions. I don't...
And then Akos barreled into my brother from the side. He wasn't big enough to topple Rizek, but he had caught him off guard, and Rizek stumbled. Akos pulled his elbow back to punch. Stupid, I thought to myself. But Rizek was too fast. He kicked up from the ground, hitting Akos in the stomach, then stood. He grabbed Akos by the hair, wrenching his head up, and sliced along Akos's jawline, ear to chin. Akos screamed. It was one of Rizek's preferred places for cutting people. When he decided to give a person a scar, he wanted it to be visible. Unavoidable.
Please, I just said. Please, I don't know how to do what you ask. Please don't hurt him. Don't hurt me. Please.
Rizek stared down at Akos, who was clutching his face, his neck streaked with blood.
I do not know this Thuvazit word. Please, Rizek said.
Later that night, I heard a scream echoing in the quiet hallways of Noavek Manor. I knew it didn't belong to Akos. He had been sent to our cousin Vakrez, to grow thicker skin, as Rizek put it. Instead, I recognized the scream as Aija's voice raised in acknowledgement of pain, as my brother tried to pry the future from his head. I dreamt of it for a long time thereafter. Chapter 8. Syra. I woke with a groan. Someone was knocking. My bedroom looked like a guest room, no personal touches,
All the clothes and beloved objects hidden in drawers or behind cabinet doors. This drafty house, with its polished wood floors and grand candelabras, held bad memories.